I Hate the News is the weekly news bulletin from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. It's December 3rd, 2024. The Archdiocese of Baltimore closed 31 parishes on December 1st as part of a reorganization plan. The Archdiocese had filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection last year in 2023, following Maryland's decision to lift the statute of limitations on child sex abuse claims. Governor Wes Moore comes out as skeptic on the proposal to build a new high-voltage transmission line between Baltimore and Frederick. Montgomery County has long been wrestling with police staffing, even before the pandemic. We have an update. And the bizarre case of a high school football recruitment scandal in Fairfax County. 31 student transfers followed a new head coach at Hayfield Secondary School. And more. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by the Political Science Program at UMBC Shady Grove, where you'll learn a strong foundation in public policy, pre-law, and international affairs for an impactful career in a number of essential areas. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now.
When I fall down, I will stay down.
Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band for the moment spanning red, blue, and purple states, Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam LeGrone on bass and synths, Ben Heath, guitar and synths, and Montgomery County's very own planning board commissioner, James Hedrick, on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and available on Bandcamp. Sting Pain Index. Two-thirds of Baltimore's black Catholic parishes were closed December 1st as part of a reorganization plan by the local archdiocese. Major changes were expected after the Baltimore Archdiocese filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection last year, 2023. Maryland had just passed a new law to remove the statute of limitation on child sex abuse claims. Then, in September 2023, the State Attorney General's office released a 456-page report that included a list of 156 clergy, teachers, seminarians, and others who were alleged to have abused over 600 children going back to the 1940s. These names were initially redacted, but a Baltimore judge ordered the redactions lifted on all but three. All of this led to the expectation that the Archdiocese would face a slew of new sexual abuse lawsuits, and the Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing was believed to be anticipatory. At that time, Baltimore Archbishop William E. Lurie said the decision would allow the Archdiocese both to equitably compensate victim survivors of child sexual abuse and ensure the local church can continue its mission and ministries. In response, the Maryland chapter of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP, said that the bankruptcy filing was intended to close the liability window opened by Maryland law. In his statement, Archbishop Laurie clarified next steps. Chapter 11 is one of two types of bankruptcy, he wrote in a statement. With an approved plan under Chapter 11, the Archdiocese will be reorganized, victim survivors will be equitably compensated, and the Church will continue its mission and ministries. This is different from Chapter 7 bankruptcy, where organizations sell all their assets to satisfy creditors and shutter their doors. Announcing the reorganization plan, Archbishop Laurie said that it was not related to the Chapter 11 process.
We will merge 61 parishes to 30 worship and ministry sites in Baltimore City and in the immediate suburbs. Many are wondering when these mergers will take effect. While some parish mergers will occur more quickly in the coming months, others will continue over the next year or so. Careful consideration will be given to the sale of any church property to ensure responsible reuse for new parish communities and our neighbors. I have heard speculation connecting future sales of properties to supporting the bankruptcy settlement. This is just not true. During implementation, some properties will be repurposed, while some will be sold. Proceeds from any building sale will remain in the parish and follow the people to the newly formed parish. This is church law, and it is supported by civil law.
Heading south, a new 70-mile high-voltage power transmission line project from Baltimore to Frederick called the Maryland-Piedmont Reliability Project, MPRP for short, is opposed by farmers and county leaders in Baltimore, Frederick, and Carroll counties, and now Maryland Governor Wes Moore. In an official statement, Moore said, "I share grave concerns about how the study area for this project was determined, the lack of community involvement in the planning process, and the lack of effective communication about the impacts of the project. The single most important factor remains wholly unclear: the project's comprehensive benefit to Marylanders." In October, Moore joined New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, Delaware Governor John Carney, and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, asking the regional transmission organization that governs electricity planning across the 13 states, called PJM, to act more collaboratively. At a community event in October, Frederick County Executive Jessica Fitzwater laid out the complaint.
MPRP has galvanized this community unlike any issue in recent memory. People are frustrated, angry, and confused. Everyone wants more information about how we got here and what happens next. Frankly, I am frustrated as well. We have not been given enough information about why this transmission line is necessary and how it will affect us. I know many of you are afraid that an out-of-state utility company will use eminent domain to seize your property to build a transmission line. Some are afraid that the line will cut across your farm, jeopardizing your investment in your land and threatening your ability to pass that land on to your kids and grandkids. Others are afraid that the line will cut across land that was preserved with public dollars and was meant to stay preserved for generations to come. I don't want those things to happen either. County officials do not have the legal authority to stop those things from happening. The law is clear. The federal government has authority over regional transmission planning. The state government has authority over siting, permitting, and construction of lines. Once the State Public Service Commission authorizes a line, and I'm quoting from a Maryland Supreme Court decision here, quote, "little more remains for a local government to do except perform the ministerial duty of issuing the necessary building permits," unquote. That's it. I have made sure that state leaders know our concerns. On August 8th, in partnership with Democrats and Republicans on the County Council, we sent a letter to Mr. Gilroy and Mr. Kawa, who are here with us this evening. Later in August, in partnership with the Baltimore County Executive and the Carroll County Commissioners, we met with Governor Moore to express our frustration. On September 4th, again, in partnership and through the leadership of the Frederick County Council, we sent a letter to the Maryland Public Service Commission urging their rejection of an application that is not responsive to our community's concerns.
Montgomery County has long struggled with police staffing, even before the pandemic. Public safety became a growing concern in 21-22 with protests demanding defund the police, on the one hand, and increases in retail theft, carjackings, and homicides on the other. With crime numbers now back down, especially after the federal government has managed to regulate online home assembly, unserialized ghost guns, the county is still struggling with police staffing. Susan Farag is a longtime public safety analyst for the Montgomery County Council. She spoke to the County Council's Public Safety Committee on December 2nd.
It takes about 18 months from advertisement to putting a new officer on the street in a way that's meaningfully increasing sworn strength. And the department faces more losses in 2025, which recruiting itself is not going to immediately address. The authorized sworn complement is 1,278. 1,112 of these are filled. Patrol staffing has the most officers, approximately 65% of the authorized sworn complement. 640 officers on paper are available on any given day for patrol, but that doesn't include things like regular leave for annual, sick, parental, court, or training. Those are often backfilled with overtime if minimum staffing amounts are not met. Response times are longer since 2019. They're about 41 seconds longer for priority calls and about 53 seconds longer for routine calls across the county. The good news is that response times have dropped slightly from last year, about 13 seconds lower for priority calls and 4 seconds faster for routine calls. Overtime, however, does continue to increase. The approved FY25 department-wide overtime budget was $11.6 million, but the department overspent that by $8.2 million, or 86%. Attrition rates have varied over the past 3 years. The turnover rate was 7.3% in 2021. That bumped up to 12.5% in 2022, dropped down to 10.5% last year, and now it's slowing to just 6% this year so far. Department has estimated that it may lose more than 30 officers to direct retirements in 2025 and more than 70 who enter the drop.
Montgomery County Police Chief Mark Yamada brought up some interesting staff redeployment proposals.
I'm exploring the possibility of redrawing district boundaries to equalize the workload between districts. This would be a pilot plan right now involving the 3rd and 4th districts. We're also looking at assigning an executive officer to oversee daily staffing for the entire county as opposed to one single district. This will help with monitoring overtime, holdovers, and callback. We openly acknowledge the possibility of difficult decisions that exist in our very near future. This would include things such as consolidating specialized and investigative units, reevaluating follow-up investigations, reevaluating true workload, much like we did during the pandemic, assessing our response to calls for service. A new report management system is on the horizon that includes more effective use of officers' time and better tracking of data. The expansion of our DFR to 6D and eventually to White Oak and Bethesda, improving our ATEU, that's our automated traffic enforcement efforts, implementation of our RTIC, our real-time information center, enhanced that by utilizing Fusus and our camera program. What I'm looking for still is a full analysis on the decision to move out of Rockville City and Gaithersburg City.
And finally, Assistant Chief Darren Frank talked about the need to limit investigations given the staffing concerns.
Investigative Services Bureau, what that offers us, there's some tough decisions to be made, especially when you get into the bigger staffing deficit, because there will be less service to the community. And where that comes from is going to be in follow-up investigations. We don't want to do it, but the reality of the numbers that are coming, and without some miraculous event to turn around our hiring fortunes. Without that, the chief is going to have to make difficult decisions on what investigations get followed up, or do we limit investigations more? Or for this Investigative Services Bureau workload analysis, one of the things we've asked for is current best practices on follow-ups and solvability factors. The investigative services part covers major crimes, special victims. It covers our electronic analysis unit.
In Alexandria, in Northern Virginia, Hayfield Secondary School's football program is embroiled in a recruitment scandal where a new coach allegedly brought in 31 new players, many of whom did not live within Hayfield school boundaries. And some lived even in Prince William County, where the coach used to run the football program at the Freedom Woodbridge High School. Shravan Ganavarapu covered the story for Fairfax Times.
Earlier this spring, former Hayfield coach Saeed Aziz was let go, despite a very successful tenure. And their athletic director of Hayfield, Monty Fritz, in consort with their principal, Dr. Darren Thompson, had decided to bring in Freedom Woodbridge head coach Daryl Overton to their school. Overton was very successful at Freedom Woodbridge, winning multiple championships and having some elite talent in terms of their players. Upon his arrival, Overton had discussed bringing in several transfers from within the state of Virginia, Washington, D.C., and Maryland. When Overton arrived with his staff, there were several notable players, including his nephew, Jeffrey, who is a Virginia Tech commit. And another player, his name was Juju Preston. He is committed to Clemson University in South Carolina, which is a very prestigious football school.
An athlete can only play for a school if they live within the school's boundaries. Where are these transfers from? Do you have a sense?
Well, one of them initially was coming from Maryland, DeMatha Catholic, which is a private school. One other player was coming from St. John's College Prep in Washington, D.C.
These powerhouse football teams, now they were going to Hayfield Secondary to play for Coach Overton.
Yes, it was suspicious. And 14 players, we have confirmed, they were living in the Woodbridge area where Freedom Woodbridge is. And then they transferred to Hayfield. They were not in the Alexandria Hayfield district.
Once this got found out, what happened?
When this first came out, they were allowed to play the regular season. And while the investigations were going on, then it all came to a head in September, I believe, when they came to Chantilly. They put up 70-0 was the score. I was at the game, and there were several Chantilly players that were carted off with injuries. And it really was a worry because, like, oh my God, that is not a high school team. That is an all-star team playing against a public school. How is that possible? Hayfield went on to crush everybody else in the regular season before it came ahead in the playoffs that they would not be allowed to play in the playoffs. They appealed the decision. It was denied. And then parents sued for a temporary injunction. They received it. And then finally, the text messages came out from their athletic director that were very alarming, that ultimately forced them to be withdrawn from the playoffs.
What did the text messages show?
What the text messages were saying, they were trying to use a loophole in the Homeless Player Act. Because if you are registered as homeless, you can technically go anywhere.
Many of these players were not, in fact, homeless.
They were not homeless at all.
What's going to happen now?
Well, they're not playing. Instead, Fairfax, who they were supposed to play this week, Fairfax will get a bye to the regional final on Saturday, which I know this won't be airing on November 30th. That'll be the regional championship game. Mm-hmm. What comes next is a court hearing on December 4th. That will determine whether or not the ban of a 2-year postseason ban that was initially levied against them, does that ban get upheld or do they revoke that punishment completely?
Is Overton still there at Hayfield? Or?
Yes, he is still there. He has not been removed yet. The athletic director is the only one who has left. He has resigned.
Shravan Ganaparapu, thank you.
Thank you, Sunil. Appreciate you.
That's all for this episode. Be sure to check out our feature interview series that comes out Friday mornings. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer Adama Gay, with support from University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band that straddles Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam Legrone on bass and synth, Ben Heath on guitar and synth, and Montgomery County's own James Hedrick on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and is now available on Bandcamp. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihbpod.org. See you next time.
A trophy left by a stray cat. I prick my finger on the sharp part and say the F word too and at myself and just throw it away. Evidence lacking any fingerprints. Wearing my hair shirt.